All right, strap in, everyone. Today, we are going deep on a case, Keeler v. Superior Court.
Ooh, yeah.
A real legal thriller from 1970 in California. This one grapples with a question for the ages. When does a fetus legally become a human being?
Big question.
Huge. It all starts with a really awful situation. Robert Keeler, he assaults his ex-wife, Teresa, who was pregnant at the time.
Right.
Tragically, the fetus doesn't make it.
Yeah.
And to make things even more complicated, she was carrying another man's child.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, lots of layers here. But what's crucial is that the fetus was already viable, somewhere between 28 and 35 weeks.
So able to survive outside the womb, potentially?
Exactly. That's what makes this case so legally and ethically complex.
It really boils down to this one phrase in California's murder statute, human being.
Mm.
The court had to figure out, in the context of murder, does that include a viable fetus?
So the case hinges on the definition of murder itself.
Precisely. Not just about the horrible facts of the case, but the very meaning of the law. The court had to dig way back to figure out the legislative intent, like all the way to the original 1850 statute. What did human being even mean back then?
Wow, okay. What did they find out?
Well, in 1850, and this was common law at the time, human being basically meant born alive.
Mm-hmm.
They even cited those legal giants, Koch and Blackstone. Both were super clear that unless a baby was born alive, killing a fetus wasn't considered homicide.
So the court seemed to be leaning towards excluding fetuses no matter if they were viable or not.
Yeah, you could say that. But it wasn't just about history. They were also worried about due process.
Due process? How so?
Well, imagine if they suddenly expanded the definition of human being to include fetuses. Wouldn't that be unfair to Keeler?
Yeah, I guess so.
He had no way of knowing his actions would be considered murder under the law at the time.
Right. Right. It's like changing the rules of the game after the game is already over.
Exactly.
Hold on, though. Didn't California already have laws about abortion in 1970?
They did. But the court was adamant about something called the separation of powers.
What does that mean?
They were basically saying, look, it's not our job to update the murder statute. That's up to the legislature.
Okay, I see.
Even though, you know, society's views might have been changing, the court felt bound to follow the law as it was written.
So they were sticking to the letter of the law.
Precisely. We can't just rewrite the law because we think it should be different.
Makes sense. But I'm sure not everyone agreed with that. What about the dissent in this case?
You're right. Justice Burke had some serious objections. He thought the majority completely misread the common law. He pointed to cases where quickened fetuses actually had some separate legal recognition.
Interesting. So acknowledging the fetus at a certain point as having some legal rights.
Yeah, something like that. And he went even further, saying laws need to keep up with new science. Viability in 1970 was totally different than in 1850.
Makes sense.
Maybe the legislature's original intent could be understood differently now.
It does seem like rigidly sticking to a 120-year-old definition, especially with viable fetuses who could survive,
right,
could lead to some ethical contradictions.
That was precisely Burke's point. Like, how can killing a viable fetus be treated so differently from killing a newborn?
That's a tough question to answer. Powerful argument. But wouldn't going with Burke's logic give the court a ton of power?
Yeah.
Like, they'd be rewriting laws, not just interpreting them.
You've hit the nail on the head. That's the whole debate between judicial activism and judicial restraint.
Right.
Burke seemed to be all for a more, shall we say, flexible approach to the law, letting it change with the times. But the majority, no way, they stuck to their judicial lane and said, lawmaking, that's for the legislature.
It shows you how tricky it can be, right? Trying to balance the written law with, you know, how society's views change.
Yeah, a real legal and ethical tightrope walk. So what happened next? After the court made its decision, I mean, did the California legislature just say, okay, that's that? Oh, no, not at all. They actually jumped right on it. Later in 1970, that same year, they amended Section 187 of the Penal Code.
The murder statute.
The one and only. And they specifically added fetuses to the definition of murder.
So they basically fixed the loophole that the court had pointed out.
Pretty much. But they did make some exceptions for, you know, legal abortions, trying to balance things out a bit.
Okay, so taking into account both sides of the argument, in a way.
Exactly. Keeler really sparked a huge conversation, not just about this one case, but about fetal rights in general. Like, what does the law say about protecting the unborn?
And that debate is still going strong today, right?
Oh, absolutely. But you mentioned something earlier about Keeler having a ripple effect across the U.S.
Right. What was that all about?
Well, Keeler became kind of a landmark case for other states, like a touchstone. They were all wrestling with this fetal homicide question, too. And a lot of them, at the time, had that same born-alive rule in their laws.
So Keeler just reinforced the status quo in a lot of places.
Unless a state legislature actually stepped in and changed their murder statute to include fetuses, yeah, the courts were kind of stuck with that born-alive logic.
Wow. One California case influencing the whole country. That's pretty amazing.
It really is. But it also highlights how American law can be kind of a patchwork, you know? Different states, different values, different politics, they all tackle the issue in their own way.
And that's still true today, right? All the different laws about fetal personhood, what kind of legal protections fetuses have.
Totally. Keeler didn't settle the debate, not by a long shot, but it definitely shaped how that debate has continued in the courts and legislatures ever since.
It's amazing how a case from, what, over 50 years ago can still be so relevant today.
It's true. It really forces you to think about those fundamental questions. Life, death, what role does the law play in all of that? It reminds us that law isn't stuck in time. It changes along with society's values. Keeler is like a snapshot of that whole process of legal and social change.
Makes you wonder what people will be saying about Keeler another 50 years from now.
Oh.
But for our listeners right now, lawyers and law students, what are the big takeaways from this case?
Well, Keeler is like a masterclass in how to interpret laws. It shows how crucial it is to understand the history, the legislative intent behind a law, not just the words as they are today.
Like being a legal detective, right?
Yes, exactly. You've got to piece together all the clues from the past to make sense of the present. And Keeler is also a warning about the limits of judicial power. The court bent over backwards to avoid stepping outside its role and horning in on the legislature's territory.
So if you're a lawyer arguing a case and the law seems outdated or unclear,
right,
Keeler would suggest, instead of asking a court to rewrite the law, focus on getting the legislature to change it.
Exactly. Working within the system to push for legislative change. That's usually the best, most legitimate way to achieve real, lasting legal reform.
Makes sense. So we've covered a lot of ground here, the historical context, the legal reasoning, the impact of Keeler. But let's bring it back to our listeners. What's the so what for them? Why should they care about a case that, you know, might seem like ancient history?
Because Keeler raises questions that are just as urgent now as they were back in 1970, like how do law, morality, science all intersect? Especially as our understanding of fetal development keeps evolving.
It's like it's challenging each of us personally to figure out where we stand on these issues.
You got it. And that's why this whole deep dive is so important. It's not just about understanding one case. It's about wrestling with the deeper questions that shape our entire legal system, our whole society even.
Well said. And sadly, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners to chew on?
Keeler definitely leaves us with a lot to think about. Where do we draw the line between a court simply interpreting a law and actually trying to rewrite it? How much leeway should courts have when it comes to adapting the law to new scientific discoveries, new social realities? It's a tough question, no easy answers, but it's one we all need to grapple with.
Whether you're a lawyer, a judge, or just a citizen.
Exactly. It goes to the very core of the rule of law, the balance of power in a democracy. Keeler v. Superior Court forces us to confront those issues head on.
It really gets the wheels turning, doesn't it? This isn't one you just forget about.
You said it. Keeler shows us how law, science, morality, they're all tangled up together, always evolving.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, haven't we? A real deep dive into Keeler v. Superior Court. It's a case that just keeps on giving. There's so much there to unpack.
I agree. It's one of those cases that you can really dig into and always find something new.
Before we go, anything else you'd like to add? Any last nuggets of wisdom for our listeners?
Well, I think Keeler throws down a challenge for all of us.
Yeah.
It asks, where exactly is that line between a court just interpreting the law and actually trying to legislate from the bench? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, how much flexibility should courts have when it comes to adapting the law to new situations?
Especially as science advances and society changes. Tough questions.
Really tough. No easy answers there, but these are questions every lawyer, every judge, really every citizen needs to think about.
Because it gets at the heart of how our system works.
Exactly. The rule of law, the balance of power in a democracy. Keeler v. Superior Court, it forces us to confront all of that head on.
Well, that just about wraps things up for our deep dive into Keeler v. Superior Court. We hope you found it informative, maybe even spark some debate around the water cooler.
Always a pleasure diving into these fascinating legal issues with you.
And a huge thank you to all our listeners for joining us on this journey through the twists and turns of the law. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.